Hi, everyone. I'm back again for another reading from one of my books. Today, we're going to read from the Jesus Trilogy and from the third book in the trilogy, which is called Love and Surrender. I'm going to read chapter 2 from that book. It's called Surrendering the I. If you pay close attention to your thoughts, you will quickly see that they revolve around I. Most thoughts are about yourself or are being thought because they have some importance and relevance to I. Most of the time, what goes through your mind is a dialogue between you and you, about you, or things of interest to you. You are very important to you. Even thoughts about others ultimately relate back to you and your relationship with them. How do they feel about you? How do they or did they affect you? How will they affect you when? What do you like or not like about them? What do you think about them? All of this rumination related to you creates a sense of yourself in relation to others and to the world. This sense of yourself is what I'm calling the false self. It is, after all, just a sense of yourself. It isn't anything more than that. It cannot pick up your groceries or put your kids to bed. Something else is actually living your life, doing all the things necessary to sustain your life. And that mysterious but very real something does not need a sense of yourself to do those things. In fact, as you well know, that sense of yourself could be very different from what it is right now, and you would still exist and do things. So I think that this is a really important point, because we are hypnotized really into thinking that we are who we think we are, and that if we didn't have these thoughts about ourselves, what would we be there? We think that without those thoughts, we wouldn't function, that we wouldn't be who we are, that we wouldn't move in the world, that we wouldn't survive. And so this is a very important inquiry to turn around and take a look at, what is this me, this I, that is portrayed in the thought stream? Do you really need those I thoughts? And it's very profound discovery to see that you exist beyond those I thoughts, and that your existence doesn't even depend on them. That sense of self is infused or colored by ideas, beliefs, and images, and connected to a particular body-mind, all of which further flesh out this sense of self, making it appear more solid and real than it actually is. The sense of self seems so real, and its ideas, beliefs, and images seem so true that it influences what you do, how you do things, and when you do them, and if you do them at all. So one of the ways this sense of self becomes more real, a very important way, is that it is connected to the physical body. It's connected to the body-mind. And we're very identified with our body-mind. It seems like that is who we are, because that is the locus of our consciousness. And it's the point through which we are conscious and observing the world and experiencing the world. So it seems that our body-mind is who we are, and that this sense of self is who we are. And it's true that we do need the body-mind in order to exist, but it is actually consciousness that animates the body-mind, that makes us who we are, that is the true expression of ourselves. So this sense of self and the whole sense that we are this body-mind ends up co-opting our life in a way, because we listen to what this sense of self says about us and how we should live our life. And that's how most people live. And they don't even realize then that there is another way of living that is truer with a capital T, that is more in alignment with the truth of who we really are. That in fact, this sense of self is driven by the ego. And the ego has a very limited and fearful perception of life. So that becomes our perception of life. This sense of self's perception of life is the ego's perception, not the true self's. So that's the problem here. But that sense of self doesn't have to affect any of your activities or how you live your life. On some level, it is a choice to have your sense of self affect your existence and your activities to the extent that it does. What a radical idea that is. It is, of course, completely natural for that sense of self to influence your life. Human beings are designed to have a sense of self that seems to be real and seems to be who they are. They are designed to play the part of a specific character, although that character is not who they really are. So it isn't a mistake that we are programmed to believe this sense of self and that we are programmed to have an ego. And that's a really important point. But we are meant to wake up out of the ego and out of this false self and discover who we really are. That's what this journey of life is all about. But for many, many lifetimes, we don't know that. We simply live the life as the sense of self, as the false self. And we have the lessons and we learn and evolve as a result of those lessons and those choices. But you are listening to this because you're at a point in your spiritual evolution where you're ready to wake up. You're ready to see that that false self is not who you are. But I think it is important to realize that it isn't a mistake that people are living according to this false self. That is part of the design as well. Nevertheless, do you see that there is some choice in how much and in what way that self, that sense of self, affects your life? Your life, after all, is yours. You are not the character, and your life does not belong to the sense of self. The sense of self is just a sense, and it can change. It can even fall into the background, in which case, the real you, the one that is living your life, will barely be influenced by it. And of course, that is the state of someone who is awakened or enlightened, without getting out into some definition of those words, but the whole spiritual process of waking up and becoming enlightened is about becoming the real you in this life instead of being the false self. And for that to happen, the false self falls into the background. It doesn't ever completely disappear. It exists as thoughts about yourself and as a sense of yourself, but it falls into the background because you no longer believe it. You don't believe that it's you. And so then the real self has a chance of being really acknowledged and experienced and lived in a way like it couldn't have been lived before. Ideas and images, which is essentially what the sense of self is, can only affect you to the extent that you allow them to, and to the extent that you are unconscious of them. You don't necessarily let other people's ideas affect you, but when those ideas come from your own mind, that's a different matter. Those seem real and true. They seem meaningful to you, but they're only meaningful in that they create the false you, a pretend you, a mirage that seems like you. This wouldn't be a problem if the sense of self and all of its ideas were not also the source of human suffering, because many of the ideas are negative, limiting, and simply untrue. And because the sense of self itself is false, how can a false self and false and limiting ideas lead to happiness, peace, and love. Lies can only lead to suffering and take you away from the truth. And so they do. So this is a very good point, that life points us to the truth by showing us that the false leads to suffering. So we want to learn how to escape suffering. And then we learn that the way out of suffering is to find the truth about life and to align with that rather than the false. So life is very benevolent that way. It points us to the truth through the suffering caused by the false self. The problem with the false self is that it keeps you from recognizing your true nature and the truth about life, both of which are good news. The false self keeps you bound within a certain perception, one that causes suffering. The false self sees the world from a lens of fear, distrust, lack, and competition. It is essentially an unhappy, discontent, egocentric, and fearful self. The reason the false self is this way is because it is driven by the ego. And so there's a certain evolution that happens where people can learn to become more positive, and their false self can become more positive and less distorted by the ego's perceptions. But we are all programmed to have this ego, at least initially, really influencing the false self, the sense of self that we have about ourselves, so that we see the lens through the ego's eyes, or we see life through the ego's lot. We see life through the ego's eyes, which are eyes of fear and judgment and conflict. Something else is here that is much more than just a sense of yourself and all the ideas that go along with that. It uses the body-mind to get about and accomplish things, but the body-mind would be useless and inert without it. What is this mysterious thing that is alive within your body-mind, sensing through it and moving it about? That is your true self. It is called by many names: the divine self, essence, spirit, consciousness, awareness, the Holy Spirit, being, the higher self, and the pearl beyond price, just to name a few. So this true self is not off in a cloud somewhere. It's not off in some other dimension separate from this world. This true self is here. It's breathing. It's seeing. It's feeling. It's hearing. It's sensing life through the body-mind. It has, this life force has inserted itself into the body-mind and is using that vehicle to pretend to be a character. So that's quite an amazing thing, isn't it? And the more deeply you move into present moment experience, the more obvious this becomes, that you are this consciousness. Because once you leave the thoughts behind, the egoic voice in your head behind, you can begin to experience yourself as consciousness more and more, more easily. And it's not that hard. This is not really a hidden mystery. You are looking out of your eyes every single moment that your eyes are open and that you're conscious. That is who you are. The title of this chapter, Surrendering the I, points to the possibility of not allowing the sense of self, the false self, to shape your life and determine your choices, but allowing something else that is real and much wiser and more loving to shape your life. something that has already been shaping your life to some extent. So that's a good point also, that no matter how involved someone has been in believing the false self, in being the false self, in following the ideas that are given to you through the voice in your head, everyone still also responds naturally to the consciousness within them that is living this life. So in many moments of your day, you are this consciousness. You are experiencing life as this consciousness. It might be just very briefly, but it might be briefly hundreds of times during the day, or maybe a lot more. So the spiritual path is about extending those moments to be longer and longer and longer until you are living from this consciousness instead of the false self. This mysterious something, the real you, allows your life to be shaped by the false self and its ideas until you wake up to the realization that you are more than this. How momentous this is when you first realize that you can wake up from the prison created by the false self and live more from the indwelling spirit. And what a great mystery this business of being human is. What wakes up? What sees the truth about who you are? Who are you? What are you? Indeed, what wakes up? Good question. As I said here, before you can be released from the prison of the false self, you first must realize that you're in a prison. Getting to that point takes three things: willingness, awareness, and choice. You have to be willing to look. So many are not. And then you have to actually look. You have to choose to turn the spotlight of your attention onto something that most people don't want to look at or don't bother to look at: their own mind. Isn't it interesting that the objectivity that is felt to be so important in observing the outer world is rarely turned in on one's own mind? Rarely do you run across someone who suggests doing this. Even psychotherapists who ask their clients to look within usually assume that a client's thoughts and feelings are a true representation of who he or she is, without acknowledging that such thoughts and feelings are part of the mirage of being human and must be looked beyond to discover the real truth. But there is a place for that kind of examination, of course, and this is by no means intended as an indictment of psychotherapy. But this is an interesting point, isn't it? We think that psychotherapy is somehow a way to discover who we really are. But psychotherapy explores the false self and, to its credit, helps people improve the false self, helps create a happier false self. But it doesn't point people to what is beyond the false self. Unless it's transpersonal psychology, which does acknowledge a higher self, a true nature that is beyond the personal self, the character, the false self. So there is a segment of psychotherapy, transpersonal psychology, that does include going beyond the personal self. As long as the sense of self is felt to be the real self, the experience of the real self will be only fleeting and not recognized. The real self will remain in the background, unacknowledged, and therefore not experienced as such. Of course, it is impossible to not experience the real self, because the real self is what is reading these words and experiencing life. It is the only thing that is experiencing and can experience life. So this is what happens. The real self is not experienced because the false self is being experienced. You can't experience both simultaneously, can you? So as long as you're experiencing the false self, then it doesn't even seem like there's something else here that's living your life, unless you run into teachings like this. And so people don't even really look. And any experience that they have of consciousness, they just brush off as a mystery or something else or something that's not interesting, because the mind isn't really interested in consciousness. It's not interested in having you ask those questions. The human condition is such that people assume that something else is the real self. They assume that the false self is the real self, that it is the experiencer, the wise one, and what acts. The reality is that the false self, your thoughts, only pretends to be wise and to know things that cannot be known, while true wisdom flows from the depths of the real self and is overlooked by the false self. And actions, which could come entirely from the real self, are often determined by the false self instead, which barks out commands and seeks to control every behavior. Do this now. Do it better. Hurry up. You'll never get it done in time. Much of the commentary that goes through people's minds is a chain of thoughts designed to get them to take action in directions that will yield greater power, control, safety, security, pleasure, recognition, and comfort, all things the ego esteems. There's nothing wrong with these things, but there is much more to life. The false self doesn't know. The false self doesn't know how to create a happy, loving life. The life it creates is lopsided and detached from what brings true meaning to life. Through some kind of mutiny, the egoic mind, the voice in your head, has become the captain of this ship of the body mind, while the real captain has been sequestered down below. He has been replaced by a less capable captain whose guiding principles are fear, power, selfishness, and control. This false master is not a good master. He is not wise, and he is not kind. Reinstating the wise and kind master so that love and right action can reign once again on board is the goal of spiritual evolution. That makes me want to jump up and down and shout, yeah, yeah. Yay, goodness. Surrendering the I is impossible without first recognizing the need for surrender. You have to have clearly seen the ineptness and destructiveness of your thoughts. This takes not only awareness of your thoughts, but also the willingness to examine and question them. Surrendering the I is also not possible until you're fed up with the current master and open to noticing the real you, which has been patiently waiting for you to be done with the drama of the false self. Do you long for the goodness of your true nature? Do you long for God? Do you long to be done with the suffering caused by your judgments, mistaken beliefs, and negative feelings? Do you want peace and love more than you want your thoughts about yourself? Who or what would you be without your thoughts about you? Are you willing to discover this? The strength of your willingness and longing to be free of suffering and to know God will determine your readiness and ability to surrender. But what is involved in surrendering the I? Let's say that you find yourself caught up in a thought that makes you angry. She shouldn't have done that to me. Before you can surrender the false self's anger, you first have to see that both the thought and the anger originated in the sense of I. The I has an idea about how people should and shouldn't behave. When someone doesn't comply with that belief, you feel angry. Did the person make you angry, or did your belief? Your belief did. The I made the I angry. Do you want to feel angry? If not, the only way out is to surrender the belief that caused the anger. How do you do that? What is involved in surrendering a belief? A belief is a thought, and a thought can only remain in existence if you give it attention. If you give a thought attention, you breathe life into it. Beliefs are thoughts that you have given so much attention to that you now firmly believe them. Without your attention, a thought cannot live for very long. And without your repeated attention, a thought cannot become a belief. You are very powerful. You animate and maintain the false self with your attention. You breathe life into the false self by giving your thoughts repeated attention. Without this attention, thoughts wither, beliefs fade away. This is really good news, isn't it? Surrendering beliefs are not anything more than withdrawing your attention from them. You don't have to fix them. You don't have to get rid of them. They can even keep coming up in your thought stream. They can keep coming up in your thought stream for as long as they like. If you don't give them your attention, they will pretty soon not come up so much, and they may eventually fall away entirely. But regardless, if you don't give them your attention, they will not have any power over you. And that's the beauty. That's the beautiful thing. That's the power you have, is in your attention. It's all about where is your attention now. The default is for our attention to be glued to the television set of our mind. Furthermore, since you have to put your attention somewhere when you withdraw it from a thought, your attention will breathe life into something else. What else might you enliven and sustain with your attention? If you put your attention on a flower, for instance, you will have the experience of the flower. If you hold your attention there long enough, you will feel a sense of merging with the flower and the joy that comes with that simple yet profound experience. So there is a very excellent alternative to loving your thoughts. You know, we really are in love with our thoughts, and we think that not thinking is some painful state or some awful sacrifice, something we have to surrender against our will. But when you realize that there is a wonderful alternative that is far happier and far better than the love affair you're having with your thoughts, which only cause you to be unhappy, then it becomes easier and easier to turn away from your thoughts and to give your attention to real life, to flowers, to clouds, to blue skies, to your beloved. What do you prefer, anger or the joy of fully experiencing a flower? You get to choose. Giving your attention fully to anything other than thoughts about yourself produces joy, peace, love, and contentment. When you do that, you are no longer in the world of the false self, but have entered the world of the true self, which is a world of unity with all life. You have moved from the prison of the ego to the Father's palace. To the mind, this sounds overly simplistic and not at all practical. And yet, giving attention to a flower or anything else that is real within your sensory environment is much more practical, functional, than giving attention to any thought I have about you and your life, which at best serves no function at all, and at worst serves a negative one. Blasphemy, says the mind. How dare you tamper with the cult of the mind, the cult of me? How dare you attempt to break the spell of the false self? That is exactly what happens every time you refuse to feed a thought about yourself or any other thought that maintains the false self, such as a fearful thought or an egoic desire. Fear is in place to keep you from leaving your egoic mind behind. That is fear's job, and it will not quiet down easily. So you will have to surrender fear as well. What power you have in attention. You create your experience of life with nothing more than your attention. Life allows you to create this way. It allows you to have the experience you choose to create. You can have a life that is lost in the drama and pain of the false self, or one that is an expression of the true self. It is your choice. Surrendering the I and its beliefs is more of a not doing than a doing. You cease doing what you normally and automatically do, which is feed a thought with your attention and more thoughts. Surrender feels like a sacrifice, a letting go of something you want, because people are naturally attached to doing what they've always done, think and believe their thoughts. Surrender is difficult because it feels like you have to give up something you love doing, thinking, for nothing, while quite the opposite is true. The key to surrender is becoming aware of your attachment to a thought or feeling, to how much you want to be involved with it, even if that thought or feeling is not pleasant. Notice the pull that a thought or feeling has on you and the sense of needing to be involved with it. In some cases, you may feel like you won't survive if you don't pay attention to a particular thought. This is especially the case when fear is involved. When you're caught up in a thought or feeling, stop and take a few moments to let yourself explore and get to know the experience of that, including how a part of you enjoys feeling bad. The feeling of attachment is quite tangible, almost real. That is how convincing the mirage is. The attachment feels real, powerful, and difficult to let go of. I really like this point that was made about how a part of us enjoys feeling bad. We're actually attached to feeling we're right or feeling or having a judgment about somebody. We're attached to feeling sad. We're attached to feeling angry. There's an attachment, a certain desire, a negative enjoyment in feeling sad or feeling angry or feeling self-righteous or feeling judgmental. That's what keeps us going back to those thoughts. So we need to sit with that and experience that. See the truth about that. It actually doesn't make us feel good. That pleasure is not a real pleasure. And it's undermining our capacity to really experience life as pleasurable, as loving, as peaceful. When you're under the influence of the attachment, it's got you. You're convinced that it's powerful and difficult to let go of. But when you just stop a moment and let yourself feel the attachment fully, something very interesting happens. The attachment loosens, and it's seen for what it is, a mirage, an illusion. So when you stop and experience this attachment, you discover that it's not actually powerful or difficult to let go of. It is just a subtle experience within you. It has no power. And when you look at it and simply experience it and let it be there and see it for what it is, it loses its power to keep you attached to the thoughts. That which sees the illusion is not part of the illusion. It is the real self. When you choose to stop a moment and feel your attachment to a thought or feeling, what is able to do that is the real self. At that point, your real self has taken over and is being used to investigate the false self. The true captain is back on deck. Then you have a choice. You can go back to that train of thought or put your attention on something other than thoughts. The more you practice this, the easier it becomes to move beyond the egoic mind, the originator of the false self, and to know your true self. Specifically, here are the steps involved in surrender. These steps are what you can do to not do what is conditioned and automatic, which is to get lost in thought. Number one, notice that you're caught up in a thought, a train of thoughts, or a feeling. Number two, gently tell yourself, stop. This breaks the egoic trance, the spell of the illusion. The pause provides an opportunity to make a choice between continuing to think or surrendering thinking. Three, during this pause, notice any attachment or desire to going back to that thought or feeling. It can help mentally label it. Attachment, desire to think. Feel free to name or describe it in whatever way makes the most sense to you. Four, take a moment to feel that attachment in your body and more subtly, energetically. Where is it located? In your gut, heart, head, throat, stomach? What does it feel like? Tight, dark, sticky, grasping, empty, churning? Explore it. Examine it. Just be with the physical and energetic sense of it for a while, with curiosity and interest. Five, accept detachment. Don't be upset about it or judge it. Being attached to thinking the thoughts that go through your mind is part of being human. There has never been a human who hasn't had such thoughts and been attached to them. As long as you're in a human body, it cannot be otherwise. But such attachments don't have to control where your attention goes. Once you're aware, once you are aware of being attached to a particular thought or feeling, you have a choice. Six, next, broaden your awareness to include whatever else is present besides thoughts, feelings, and attachment to them. Look around you. Experience your environment through your senses. Notice what else is part of this moment in time. Is the sun shining? What sensations are you experiencing? What sounds do you hear? What are you aware of in your environment? Seven. Now notice what is present on a more subtle level. The subtle level is the level in which the true self resides, and it is accessed by becoming aware of your sensory experience. Is love present? Peace? Relaxation? Awe? Compassion? A sense of beauty? Can you experience any of these even just a little? What is the experience like? Can you feel the aliveness that is the signature of your true self? Eight, Give your attention more fully to the love, peace, joy, compassion, and acceptance of the true self, and you will come to know yourself as those qualities instead of as the false self. Over time, your ability to sense the subtle world of the true self will increase, and you'll begin to live increasingly as your true self. Surrender has a great reward, and that reward is love. When you surrender being lost in thought, you discover a new world, a subtle but more real world, which has been there all along, awaiting your notice and appreciation. You are what experiences this real world, and you are everything you experience as well. That is the great mystery that is you. In addition to I thoughts, fear must be surrendered. Fear is like a guard at the exit door of the false self's world. Whenever you approach the door that leads to the world of the true self, you are told that you can't go there. Fear is the guard that keeps you in your place, a place of compliant, unconscious suffering. Fear masquerades as a guard, as someone who is trying to protect you from what is beyond the door, from the unknown, but he is actually the warden who maintains your imprisonment. He keeps you from the Father's palace while pretending there is something terrible on the other side of the door. It takes courage, trust, and faith to surrender this fear and walk past the guard. People are also kept in the false self world by their desires. These are the baubles dangled temptingly before you, designed for your pleasure and for keeping you happy amidst your suffering. But the happiness they deliver never lasts for long, hence the need for another desire and another. There is no end to the false self's desires, since the false self is never satisfied. Fulfilling these desires keeps people busy and keeps them from looking within and questioning their suffering and way of life. Chasing after one desire and then another keeps you occupied and pretending that you will be happy when. People exchange happiness now for discontentment and striving and the promise of happiness in the future. The false self's desires are designed to keep you on a treadmill of activity, always reaching for something ahead while missing the beauty and perfection of life as it is unfolding right now. Surrendering the desires of the false self does not mean surrendering all desire, however, as deeper desires drive the true self. The true self's desires are felt quite differently than those of the false self. These deeper desires are what is surrendered to. You exchange the false self's desires for truer, more meaningful ones. You surrender to a higher desire, a higher will. And this might be a good point to insert what is meant by deeper desires. What does the true self desire, if you will? It's not exactly an appropriate word for the true self, but perhaps intention is a better word. What does the true self intend? What does the true self intend? What does it want for you in this life? What is it wanting to bring about through you? What is it wanting to experience through you? Those are the true self's intentions. It also has general intentions, like a general intention to grow, to evolve, to learn, to create, to love, to unite. These are the deeper desires that come to the forefront more clearly when you're not focused on the more superficial desires of the ego, of getting more or getting better or looking better, getting more things, getting more money, getting more comfort. As this reading said, all of that is fine. It's just not enough to make for a happy and fulfilling life. There's much more, and you won't find what else there is to life unless you look deeper, unless you look beyond those desires and seek something deeper, seek connection with the deeper self that knows how to make you happy and fulfilled in this life, because it knows what the divine's intention is for you in this lifetime. These desires are the will of the Father, not the will of the ego. You exchange your personal will for thy will. When you do that, your activity and actions become joyous, fluid, balanced, and kind to yourself and others. You are freed from creating negativity, and therefore, for the most part, from experiencing negativity. And whatever negativity you do experience does not affect you as it did in the past. Once you have put your life and actions in the hands of the Father, your hands are free to give of yourself and to enjoy all that you do. They are no longer tied to unfulfilling activities out of duty to conformity and other people's expectations. The Father's bidding is always good and brings happiness to all. This is a different world indeed than that of the false self. The final thing that must be surrendered is what you think you know. For to enter the Father's palace requires that you be naked in the moment, free of all pretense of knowing who you are, who others are, what will be, why things were as they were, and why they are as they are. When you are stripped this bare, then it is possible for you to know what cannot be put into words and to have access to everything you need to know for the moment. So I have written about the importance of not knowing and dropping out of the pretense of knowing that the ego has, in order to know the deeper truth about life. I've written about this probably in every book that I've ever written. I'm going to flip ahead to some more about this since we have a few more minutes, about surrendering knowing. I think. Watch those words, please. They point to speculation on the part of the mind, a mere idea that is often based on very little information or knowledge. That's a good pointer right there. Be aware when your mind says, I think. Be aware of how often it says, I think. And then pay attention to what follows that. Because what usually follows it is something that is just made up. It's not very substantiated. It is truly an opinion or just an idea that came out of nowhere. Often such thoughts have no basis in reality whatsoever. The mind just likes to think, so it thinks thoughts. It comes up with ideas pretty much out of the blue. Notice how much of your conversations with others are based on opinions and theories about anything and everything. That is what the mind does. It produces thoughts, opinions, judgments, and evaluations, among other things. These are not the objective evaluations and conclusions that your rational mind is capable of, but a horse of a completely different color. This is not intelligence functioning, but programming, pure and simple. Watch the mind. See for yourself. So here a distinction is being made between thoughts that are merely the computer programming, the the computer mind spitting out information that it's gathered and accumulated and conclusions it's made along the way, randomly, almost randomly, versus one's actual intelligence and rationality and information that is actually based on facts. Seeing this truth can be quite humbling and extremely freeing. You become free of the need to have an opinion about everything, to know about all of the things that you never could know about anyway. What a relief it is to not have to know everything and to not need to know. The false self needs to know everything, even when it can't, while the true self simply knows what it needs to know when it needs to know it, without desiring anything more than that. Another benefit of disengaging from the mind's pretend knowings is that your mental energy is freed up for other activities, perhaps for learning or for some other practical or fun application of the mind. Since you can only be involved in one kind of mental activity at a time, what will it be? The idle speculation of the egoic mind, including all the thoughts about yourself, or more intellectual pursuits, such as questioning your thoughts, investigating the more subtle realms, reading, learning, or creating something? You see, the intellect wants to be used, or let's, what I mean to say is, the true self uses the intellect to explore life, to create, to know the truth about life, to find out. The true self is curious, and it uses the rational intellect to discover things about life that enrich you, that cause you to be safer and more at peace and more loving. So the intellect is the tool of the true self, but too often it is also the tool of the ego. So the intellect is an objective aspect of yourself, whereas the thoughts in your head, the voice in your head, these are not objective, and they're often not based on truth. One of the most wonderful gifts you've been given is a mind that can explore, imagine, create, and learn. The being that you are is naturally curious and fascinated by life and loves to learn. Such enjoyable mental activities can replace the useless ruminations, fantasies, and speculations of the mind. So that is the benefit of surrendering knowing, this pretend knowing that goes on in the egoic mind. You surrender pretend knowing, which doesn't do you any good anyway. You surrender it for true knowing, for truth, and for knowing that comes from the intellect that is based on objective reality. When you spend less time mentally spinning your wheels and dealing with the emotions generated by that, you will have more time for fun, fulfilling, and meaningful activities, including just being. Furthermore, a quiet mind means you'll be able to tune into the spiritual heart and its guidance more easily. When you stop listening to the mind and begin listening more deeply to something much subtler than the mind, your life will change. Then it will be possible for you to see how truly good life is, how supportive and trustworthy it is. Your thoughts were what was causing any harshness, anxiety, fear, distrust, stress, and dissatisfaction you felt. Once you stop creating a negative internal climate by listening to your thoughts, then all that is left is love, wonder, awe, gratitude, and joy, the truth about life. when life is stripped of ego's perceptions and emotions and experienced through different eyes, life is seen more truly. Love is all around for those who have eyes to see it. Okay, so I'm going to stop right here. And I thank you once again for this opportunity. It's been a pleasure. And we'll speak again next week then. If you would like to email me with any questions, feel free to email me at Gina, G-I-N-A, at radicalhappiness.com. Radical Happiness is my website. There's lots of good stuff on it. So, again, thank you, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.